Thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation, recorded live from Bands of America Grand Nationals Marching Band Competition in Indianapolis, Indiana, at Lucas Oil Stadium, with special guest host, Mark Goff.
Hello and welcome to Talking Up Music Education. My name is Mark Goff and I'm sitting here with CEO of Music for All, Eric Martin. I'm sitting in for Mary Lurson, who couldn't be with us today. Eric, thank you for being with us today.
Well, we're glad you're here. Thank you.
So there's a big deal happening here in Indianapolis this weekend. Tell me what's going on.
This is the Bands of America Grand National Championships. It is the largest event we do at Music for All. It's a culmination of a season of 22 shows that we've done around the country, but this is Grand National. So we're proud to have 108 high school bands from across the nation coming here to perform and compete for the title of Grand National Champion, as well as six college exhibitions and a lot of activities that are geared toward music education for the students, to professional development for directors, and advocacy for our community and the nation.
Fantastic. So how does this year compare to years past?
Well, we can start off with just the facts. This is the largest Grand Nationals in the history of Bands of America. We have redone the format, tweaked it a bit so that we can actually have more capacity. We've been operating here and in other shows across the nation with a waiting list. And we've been charged by our board to try to make sure that we meet our mission and our vision to be as inclusive as possible. So we've tweaked the format, and as usually we would have 100 bands, we have 108, and we built the capacity to go to 120. So it's 3 days of activity here in Indianapolis, one of the most welcoming communities on the planet. And it's a major event, annual event that's in the top 10 in Indianapolis in terms of visitorship. So it's very important.
That's fantastic. So we have bands from all around the country, right? How many states are represented?
We have 21 states.
Wow.
And it's literally coast to coast. We have bands from Florida to Oregon, from California to Pennsylvania.
That's fantastic. If you haven't had the opportunity to experience Bands of America Grand National Championships, you got to see it to believe it, right?
It is an experience. And I think that, you know, some people joke and just say that, well, it's every performance is the game. It's halftime all the time. And in a real sense that we are privileged to be an organization that attracts some of the very finest bands in America. And it's an experience that benefits those who are really, you know, competitive and think that they want to try to make a clear shot at becoming national champion. But it's also a place where any program at any level, at any stage of their experience, we make it a welcoming environment where we treat everyone the same. And we try to make sure that we're building an environment of mutual support. So we have people who come for the first time ever. We have bands probably as small as 40 to bands up as high as 350.
Yeah. And as a Indiana retailer, you know, we represent several of the Indiana bands that are here. And I can tell you what we hear from the directors and the students that participate in this. It's just a fantastic experience for everybody. It's what you're trying to achieve, you are achieving. You're doing a great job.
Well, it's really, we work toward our mission, and it's to create, provide, and expand positively life-changing experiences through music for all. We build all of our programming, everything that we do from events to professional development to advocacy is built around that philosophy. And then we have an operating vision. I have been able to observe through the years the power of music and music making and its ability to change and engage, particularly in America now. When I grew up, there were civics classes. That doesn't exist. Band, choir, orchestra, and even sports, those are civics classes. That's where we're teaching people to be collaborative, cooperative, to work together, and to be creative. And in a real sense, that's what we do. And at the end of the day, it's our vision to be a catalyst to ensure that every child across America has access and opportunity to engage in active music making in his or her scholastic environment.
Well, you'll get an amen for me on that one.
Well, I hope that we have a major chorus on that, and particularly since we've now gone into choral and vocal education as well. It's the entire community.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your time at Music for All. You've been with the organization for how many years?
I've been an employee since 1996. Prior to that, I was a board member. And prior to that, I was a fan. I attended my first Bands of America event, I believe, in 1980. And I was just a band kid who saw an activity, and I took the opportunity to go.
And the organization has obviously grown tremendously over the last few years with your leadership. So again, congratulations to that. So let's go a little bit farther back and talk about, you know, how you got into this position of music education in the first place. Tell me your early story.
Well, Mark, honestly, if I were prettier, I could be a poster child for music education and what it would deliver. But I can tell you, I grew up in a town called Greenville, Mississippi. And yeah, I just turned officially a senior citizen. I'm 65 years old now. When I was growing up, the first 6 years of school, I spent in schools that were segregated. Everyone looked like me. All of my teachers looked like me. And grade seven, when I entered the E.E. Bass Middle School in Greenville, Mississippi, it was the first year of integration in our community. And literally, there were seven African-American children under what was called Freedom of Choice. Wasn't a choice for me. My father was vice president of the NAACP, so I was one of the seven. And one of my classmates reminds me all the time that it was six girls and me. And we went to E.E. Bass Middle School, and it was stressful. I didn't know what I would experience. And it wasn't necessarily the absolute best and most welcoming environment, but I found the band room. And I found Mr. Patterson, who was the band director. And as most of the teachers were, that they wanted to cut out the noise that was outside the classroom. And in his case, he explained it to all of us who were in that middle school band room that we were all about music. We were going to learn a new language to speak together, and we were going to have to work together to be cooperative and collaborative if we were going to be successful. So that became the homeroom for me. And I went through that. I then had the privilege of being in high school band with Dr. Sidney McKay at Greenville High School. And I was an average musician. To music educators who might hear this, you know, I played what some call the instrument of the devil. I was assigned to alto clarinet. So in a real sense, though, those experiences, the equity that existed there, the camaraderie that existed there, along with teacher support generally and parental support and community support, I ended up taking an academic approach and ended up going to Dartmouth College and the University of Michigan Law School. So my path was a different one. But when I was first practicing law in Washington, D.C., Saturday morning reading the Washington Post, I saw just a small little public announcement about a high school band show at Falls Church High School in Virginia. And I went. Band had changed in 7 years from what I had experienced. I asked if there were other shows, and they told me, well, there's this new organization, Marching Bands of America, which was going to have a show in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Called my best friend in New York, who had gone to Taste Creed High School in Kentucky, and we had gone to Dartmouth together, and he took the train down from New York. We drove across the mountains to a show, and I was hooked. I ultimately, after just watching and experiencing as a spectator, I moved to Atlanta to be general counsel for a black startup airline. We flew it up until we flew it into bankruptcy. And I went back into practicing law. But I had become a volunteer for the Spirit of Atlanta Drum and Bugle Corps. Okay. I had helped a gentleman, Don Whiteley, who had worked for DCI, to start his parade and special event company. And I would just volunteer. I was his lawyer, but I would volunteer. We ultimately, he was hired by the Martin Luther King Center to produce the Martin Luther King National Holiday Parade. We always joke that I enjoyed doing this much more than practicing law. He was right. I became a business partner, and I got into the parade and festival business. Was elected to the board of directors of the International Festival and Events Association. Met Scott McCormick at one of those meetings. He came to a session that I presented on legal issues. Got invited up to observe a board meeting, was elected to the board. And in 1996, he asked me if I had a summer that I could come up and help the organization. And I did come to Chicago, and I never left.
Wow. Man, such an amazing story. And so many different directions we could go with that to talk about, you know, the impact of music education. I was just curious. So what grade were you when you went to this new high school?
Seventh grade.
Seventh grade. Okay. So between seventh grade and when you graduated and you were in the band, what kind of changes did you see within the band compared to what was happening in the general population of the school?
Mark, till today in Greenville, Mississippi, there are still separate reunions. The only time that I've gone to, I went to one reunion where it was integrated because I attended. And it's not because that people aren't making the efforts, but it was a difficult period in Greenville. First, there was freedom of choice for the first 5 years. So slowly the population grew from 7 to maybe 100. And then the courts ordered total integration and just prior to our senior year. So we merged three high schools our senior year. It was okay. It was effective, but it really, you did have two communities. And many of us went on to college and went to our different ways. And unfortunately, I have been invited to attend what would be the 50th reunion, I believe, coming up, but a major reunion coming up. And truly, it's the African-American side of the community. And I won't be able to attend because we'll be in band camp at the same time at Ball State. But the difference between the general population and band was that there was a band reunion and everybody came. And it really, even the students who were introduced to the high school, that merged high school as seniors, were present. There are people who are music educators across the country who, Dr. McKay, Mr. Anthony, Mr. Dula, all of the people who were there with us influence. And that shows up. And I can tell you that when I was at Bands of America, I had the privilege of inviting Dr. McKay, who had gone on to Memphis State University, to come to the Music for All National Festival. And I spoke to what then was probably 1,200 students at the banquet, the honors banquet at the end of the festival. And I had the opportunity to look at the students and to say, cherish your teachers, because I don't know that you'll all have the opportunity that I'm about to have, which is to look at my high school band director and thank him for everything he did for me, and that everything that he sees in this room is a product also of how he affected my life and the investment he made in me. Yeah. So, you know, 2 years ago in September, you know, we gathered again in Memphis to lay him to rest. And it's just the band community came together.
I bet that was a big big celebration, wasn't it?
It was a celebration and just a tribute to who he was. Sure. The power of music education, because it allows teachers to delve into a level of a student's spirit and heart that does not necessarily exist in the math or the biology.
Sure, sure. Wow, that's great. So, you know, you and I have the honor of working together on advocacy for arts education here in Indiana. So I have been working at the state and the local level. You also at the state and local level. We also have this opportunity with Music for All to see music programs all across the country. So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what that looks like, where it's working well and where there are some challenges. So let's start with the challenges first. I mean, we know what a strong arts program looks like. We know what it takes to build that and sustain it. Where are you seeing nationwide, what are the significant obstacles that are standing in the way of kids having the opportunity to have a strong arts program?
Mark, the interesting thing is that, first, the most important thing is thank you, and to everyone who's investing in music education. You can be successful without making this additional commitment. But I have had the privilege of doing a number of activities, one going with NAFME and NAM and going to the Hill. And regardless of how I might be partisan in one direction or another, I didn't go to anybody's office who was representing Indiana who didn't believe that music education was important. Sure. The light went off for me is that the struggle we're in is that compared to the health of the nation, its safety, so many other issues, that there's deemed to be a higher priority. Right. Yet no one denies the value and the benefits of music education. How I find that shows up as we have all of these other discussions about the issues that are important to human beings, there's a not the necessary recognition of music and arts education as a tool for engagement, for improvement, for community healing. You know, you can't be born, live, or die without music in the fabric. You can't go to war without music. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we as a nation intrinsically recognize, but sometimes we lose a sense of what that means and how we must absolutely protect it. We're Music for All, Bands of America. We serve the strongest communities for music education and education in our nation. They all invest heavily in music education. But my concern is always, what about our core urban areas? What about our small and rural schools, where there are choices that are being forced upon communities to choose to, you know, we've got this STEM versus STEAM mentality in America, and the two go together. We're so worried about testing. And I live in Pike Township here in Indiana. Well, we elect our school board. Prior to this year, I really couldn't tell you about who I was voting for. I went to the meetings this year to listen to and learn from these folks. And I live in the most diverse part of Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Everybody recognized the importance of education. The community gets along well. But not one of the seven candidates said the word music or arts in 2 hours of discussion. Sure. STEM came up. Being accessible to people of many different cultures that came up, safety, whether or not we would arm teachers and how we would provide for a safe building. The best way to provide for a safe building is to have a wonderful community that's truly engaged. And so I asked the question, what about music and the arts? And to a person, they all spoke of their children's or their own experiences in the arts. But we have got to stop taking that for granted and to really... I'm having a realization now that Music for All, our state association, we've got a responsibility to describe what a strong music program looks like and to introduce it. And almost have it as a checklist or a standard of which communities ought to be assessed against, because the power of it is clear. People were citing statistics saying that we were losing ground competitively in the world in terms of test results and scores. But they fail to realize we are the most diverse nation in the world. And we have to have common language in music and arts and even sports. All of those are common languages, and those are essential. People may think that we fail at the high school level in education scholastically and teaching based on test results. Yet everyone in the world, when they're looking at graduate school, which requires creativity, innovation, and creativity, they come to America. There's a reason why. Right. It's the best education in the world.
Yeah. So we talk about this at the Indiana Arts Education Network about the difference between wellness and emergency room. You know, I think what you're describing with those school board members is they're reacting to the events of the day, right? The events of the day are focusing on school safety. And so that's an emergency room, response that we've got to rush and fix this. While nobody's denying the power of arts education, music and arts education, it falls down on the list of priorities where they just assume, right, it's all okay. They assume it's fine, and we're going to put our energy over here. Listening to you right now, it just reminds me of our job of that educating is nonstop. It's nonstop.
It is nonstop, and we also have to be realistic enough to note that that is not a problem in our wealthiest suburban communities. The resources will be found either governmentally, as they should be, and or with the interests of caring parents in a community that's vested in their community. Real estate values are affected by quality of schools. So strong communities have no issue, really. Right. But what is our duty to challenge communities? Mm-hmm. And if, to me, America does not succeed unless we can look at what our vision is, that every child across America has access and opportunity. And that's when it takes more than just a strong school district that it's easy to make sure that those things happen if you're not otherwise resource challenged. But when you are resource challenged, someone has to be a gatekeeper to ensure that we're there. Congress has helped us. The new act is clear on that issue. Thank you to NAFMA and NAM and all of the leadership there. But there is a vigilance that I, as a personal citizen, I, as a citizen who represents a member of the community whose office is in the IPS district in our community, I cannot sit quietly and abide with an absence of opportunity for all of our kids.
So you've talked earlier about your access through Music for All to programs of all sizes, and they come in all shapes. Can you think of an example of a program that would fall in that, what you would consider a challenged situation, where they have been able to overcome that and build a really strong music and arts program?
I think a number of them exist in Texas. There's some in Dallas. The Spring District is very diverse. They also are coming from the strength that Texas, of all places, has one of the most equitable school funding systems in the country, where it actually does try to balance the dollars in communities. That's not the case in so many other communities. I know that we've recently launched what we call the I-65 Corridor Project. We've worked in Indianapolis since we came here, and even before we moved our corporate offices here. For more than two decades, we've been involved. And it's a slow growth, two steps forward, three steps backwards, but we keep making that effort. And it's not just Core City Indianapolis, it's Muncie, it's rural, small and rural schools. It's a challenge. But one of the reasons we created this corridor program was because of the great work being done in Metro Nashville schools. And we looked at the investment that the Country Music Association was making. You know, music makes us, you know, the country music capital of the world. They looked at how could they exist there and not have depth and quality across the board in their public schools. So we built our model for that corridor plan to include what we thought was the strongest and highest performing district, hoping that it would help us and also influence and encourage a little healthy competition between communities to say, if Nashville can do it, Indianapolis can do it. Louisville does it better. Birmingham, that we thought that we could learn from each other. And we've also changed our strategy. Our strategy now is that we don't control school boards or school principals or even the teachers. At our vision, we want to be a catalyst. So in a real sense, what we have said, there's just two commonalities of almost every public school that remains. There's students and there's a teacher. So we believe that regardless of the other obstacles, there are things that students and teachers working together, leadership models that the successful schools here apply in terms of being collaborative and program building, and we're teaching that to say what we can't guarantee you that the principal or the board will ever support you, but there's a music class and you have a teacher and you need to embrace and invest in each other, and we're providing resources and skills to how to leverage that commonality. So that's our focus now.
Yeah, there's a lot there. So we talk about music teachers, and we all know that who have been in music education for years, that strong music teachers are the core of strong programs. You've got local administration and district administration. Talk about how they can be a part of the success of a successful music and arts program.
Early on, you said my involvement in music education. I'm a lawyer. I'm an alto clarinet player. So if I offend any educators in the world or offend from an educational philosophy, it's a mistake of the head and not the heart. But I believe that every school and every student deserves to have a master teacher in front of them. Now, we train good teachers. We really develop future teachers from having great experiences from great programs.
Yeah, absolutely.
We also, though, have a responsibility to try to help those teachers to be a master teacher in a core urban environment is a little different. While the pedagogy of playing clarinet does not change, how you teach must. It must adapt to, and it must be a part of that choice. So I think that the real focus that we have to have is to equip teachers who may come out of strong programs where they were taken through a leadership model that didn't require them to be leaders. And I'm going to call out a school that has been successful at Bands of America forever, Marion Catholic High School. I had another revelation that when we did the highlight tapes of all of the finalist bands last year, and we showed them in the warm-up room, and we had teachers and others to talk about their experience in their program. Every image of Marion Catholic High School where they were rehearsing, it was a student doing the warm-up or teaching. Mm-hmm. Never, that was the only band out of 12 where the head band director was never on the podium in front of the students in the video that we shot. Mr. Bim may have at some place, but that leadership model, that how to put that into a can and export that, because I really believe in the desire of all children who are involved in music education to be successful. And where we are challenged from a master teacher resource is that we have to teach and train and encourage master teachers to create master students who are teachers. And it's possible. I've seen it.
Sure is possible. But the skill set of learning to be a music teacher, putting a program together, teaching skills, pedagogy, the ability to play a specific instrument, those are all necessary, but they're not enough to survive in a tough urban environment. There's another skill set that's necessary there. You and I both know of a young local band director who I won't mention his name, who had some success here in Indianapolis. And I remember having a conversation with him, and he told me during that conversation that over a period of a semester at his school, he never had the same group of kids in his band any 2 days. There was always a different group of kids. Some were coming, some were going, which is an incredible challenge, obviously, to build and sustain a program with consistency when the kids aren't there consistently.
It's a challenge, but the interesting thing is he managed it and he produced a band program that competed in Grand Nationals.
Yeah, he did well.
And I believe that we have a sufficient quality of sufficient number of educators who, if passionate about it, can achieve similar results. And what we have to do is to clear the pathway or to be there to assist where it's absolutely necessary. This is an opportunity to reinvent community. And in our community, for example, we went from 7 high schools to 4 this year. We are engaged in rebuilding community. And the difference, I have no idea whether it'll work or not, is not to start from the community and build down to the student, but to take the student and build up to community. The students are a community. And I'm so thrilled that when we did the experience with Tennessee State, I entered the year here in Indianapolis a little despondent because we didn't have active individual marching bands. And I thought, from 7 to 4, there are more students, it should be easy. Well, I have no idea the challenges that the students, the administrators, and the teachers are facing in merging a district like that. But what I do take pride in is knowing that we created this environment and where we're asking the students to vision your own program, to do what we do at Music for All, to have a strategic plan, to have it be measurable and to live by it and to evaluate it. And one of the teachers and the students on the field last night at a rehearsal said the plan that they came to the summer symposium and developed, they finished. And now they have to sit down and decide what's next. The willingness of a teacher to see his students as collaboratively engaged in the process with them, I think we're on to something. I want to promote it. I want to continue to try to teach it. And it literally is the model that we use for growth and success at Music for All. Strategic planning.
Yeah, for sure. So when we think about advocacy and championing music education, we look at three different areas, I think. We look at the federal level, we look at the state level, and we've been talking quite a bit about the local or district level. Let's talk a little bit about the state level, either talking about Indiana or other states. What do you see as being the necessary ingredients for the state to support strong music and arts programs?
I don't know if I have the answer, but what I really look to is, I'm going to almost go local again, but just say that it ought to be approached from a state level in our state. And we show that we have that resiliency as the nation grapples with the opioid crisis, and saying that we will be, that's the one place where Congress can talk about collaboration and working together. When I look at where we are in Indiana on the issue of caliber of schools and the quality of experience of life for all of its citizens, we have to get to a place where we make a statement that there will be access, there will be equity. The Community Foundation of Indianapolis recently changed their mission to be one focused upon the citizens and ensuring opportunity and progress regardless of their status, their race, however they fit into our society. They cited a statistic that a child born into poverty right here in Indianapolis has only an 8% chance in their lifetime of ever escaping it. When we deal with that reality, the truth is, if we truly look at our city, our community, and this applies to every community across the nation, have we done anything, even in our past, that puts us in the situation we are today? It's not to go back and blame, but it's to understand how we got here. And this is where you may want to edit this, but quite frankly, I'm amazed. I'm from Mississippi, and I told you the story of integration in Mississippi. This community I live in today segregated its schools in the 20th century. That has demons that come home to roost. If we recognize that and acknowledge that, I believe that all people fundamentally are people of goodwill. Then we could not abide by that, and we will make it right. This is the greatest nation on the planet. We have the capacity to make it better, if not right. And we can focus on purely on music and arts education. If a well-rounded school in suburbia includes music and arts education, and that's part of what makes it great, then let's ensure that every school has those components and the resources with which to deliver.
Yeah, that's great stuff. I was recently in Baltimore, and we saw an amazing presentation by a local community-based organization that provides music education in the Baltimore public schools. Fantastic presentation, tears, students were doing wonderfully. The reason that organization exists in Baltimore is because some time back, Baltimore schools decided to take music education out of the classroom, right? And so in this particular case, some community groups bubbled up to try to replace what our education process decided not to do. And while what they were doing was amazing, they told me the numbers. And the difference between the two was, this successful organization that was teaching music education from a community base was reaching 1% of the student population, just 1%. And when you look at the other method of music and arts being part of the school day, and they virtually reach all of the students. To me, that's the choice that we make. If we're going to keep music and arts education strong, it has to be part of the education process, it has to be part of K-12.
It's my fear that we may reduce or dumb down the fight to where we're looking to substitute what must be a public across the board effort. And We stand in the gap if we must, but the fight has to be to ensure that foundationally, and Congress has put us in a reasonably good place in defining what a quality education is. And then we have to have the political will to insist on it. And that's a grassroots effort. And the crazy and good news, small and rural school districts have the greatest potential to politically demand and declare that right and opportunity. And wrong of me to say it, but I'll say it, that if you take the band, the choir, the orchestra, if there is one, and you walk to the other wing of the school and talk to the football coach, the basketball coach, the volleyball coach, and engage those people, I got a funny feeling if you developed a slate of candidates who understand and embrace the importance of these things, that the smaller the community, the greater the ability to control and to leverage that. And all of the other good things and requirements of education is not just solely about the arts and sports, but I often use the example that when we were selecting our new superintendent, there were community meetings, and they were led by a reporter from the Indianapolis Star. And the question was, what do you expect from the school district? What are you looking for? And aside, there was certainly people who were new immigrants saying, please recognize we have special needs in terms of language, that we want to get to the American dream, but approach us where we are. Valid. The second part of it, they always described it, we want to have the same opportunities for our children as they do in Avon and Carmel. Right. That's so simple. If someone won the lottery tomorrow and they're in IPS schools, they will move to Avon or Carmel or some other place where they get the delivery of that which they expect for their children. And I'm still Pollyannish enough and naive enough and relying on the tradition of Mr. Anthony and Dr. McKay and people who gave equity to me to believe that Americans are people of goodwill. If we can paint the picture for them, they will deliver equity.
Well, I have a saying that I like to say. It's from Indiana. If that doesn't light your fire, your wood's all wet.
As a new Hoosier, that's a new one. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Eric. This has been inspirational to hear your past story. That's the first time I've heard that. And so that was so good to hear. As we kind of wrap it up, let's talk about what's next. So what's on the horizon for Eric Martin and Music for All?
Well, Music for All, we're transitioning from organization to institution. So Mark, I retire in 3 years. Our board, best board on the planet, preparing for succession. We have new leadership on the way. We are positioning strategically for this organization to continue to grow. I am thrilled that the organization's performance in its core repertoire of business is doing well enough in and of itself and attracting both the corporate and the opportunity for grant making or receipt of grants that allows us to reach out and embrace and work more on that vision to be a catalyst to ensure that every child has access. So our I-65 corridor program, we are teaching ourselves and those we work with to behave as we teach our children, collaboratively, creatively, and engaged. So we collaborate at every opportunity. We are seeking and intentionally looking at areas where there is an absence of service. We're trying to do it intelligently, not to dictate, but to learn. And probably the most remarkable thing that I think our organization has done, and I hope that it does in the future, is to listen to the stories of those we serve and try to serve. And they're such great minds that when you merge the skill set of those who are already successful with their true understanding of the needs of those who are in need, you get the right answers.
For sure. And then from a program standpoint, what's coming up with Music for All?
We'll be doing our, we'll right from marching band into spring festivals. We'll have our second national choir festival as part of the Music for All National Festival, serving bands, orchestras, chamber ensembles, and percussions. We will continue our relationship with our wonderful sponsor and partner, Ball State University, as the Music for All Summer Symposium continues to grow. And I believe that it will have record enrollment in its history, coming up with well over 2,000 students and teachers coming together to learn. And then we will continue to spread our wings, I-65, United Sound, working with a partner organization to push advocacy for students with special needs. It's just a strategic branching out to be more inclusive and more engaging. So we launched our first Fall Music for All marching affiliate event that will join our concert affiliate events. We served over 15,000 students in that program from a concert standpoint, and we've currently served directly more than 150,000 students a year, and that number will continue to grow.
That's amazing. Well, you're doing such amazing work, Eric. Thank you on behalf of the industry for doing what you do. It's obvious why you do what you do, and you're making a significant impact, so thank you. That's going to be it for the Talking Up Music Education at the 2018 Bands of America Grand National Championships. Thank you all for joining us.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAMM. That's Mary L-N-A-M-M.